I've been reading the book this week called Code Girls, and it was written by a woman named Liza Mundy. And she did a lot of investigating, and she tells the story of women who were recruited during the 1940s to work in the war effort. And they recruited these women specifically in the intelligence office to break codes during World War II. I am so fascinated by the whole, like, breaking code, ciphering stuff. It's like a whole language I can't speak, but it's super interesting. And the Navy and Army started looking for women, intelligent women, who could help in this way as men were going off to war. And so they were invited into this field called cryptanalysis, and basically they would work through trying to crack codes that the Germans and Japanese were using to help gather the right information to save lives and to work with the people there. And so these women were asked two qualifying questions. Do you like crossword puzzles, and are you engaged? And if the answers were yes and no, they received these secret letters inviting them to these secret meetings, and they got to be part of these teams analyzing and breaking these codes and trying to get this top secret information. So more than 10,000 women were invited and traveled to Washington, D.C., and of the 20,000 code breakers in America during the war, about 11,000 of them were women. And one of these women who took part in this was a woman named Genevieve, and she worked on a team that was trying to cipher a system that was used by Japanese diplomats around the world. Now, here's what's crazy fascinating. They were trying to, it was called Purple. The machine was this purple machine, and what would happen is the machine would scramble letters, so like if you regularly used E, it would make it a Z, and if you used S, it would make it a E. So you had to decide what the system was, and the more random it was, the harder it was to break. So this machine that these Japanese diplomats were using would change their system and settings so often that breaking the code was considered impossible. It was considered this unbreakable code. And so what they decided to do on this team was replicate the machine that was creating these ciphers so that they could figure out how they were doing it. But they'd never seen the machine. They didn't have any of the parts that went into making the machine. All they had was the output that was coming from these messages, and from that, they were trying to rebuild the system around it. Now, it's interesting because they would look for like repetitions and clues to try and understand it. And Genevieve took on this job in the War Office in Washington because she couldn't get a job. She had studied math and she wanted to be a teacher, but no university would hire a woman to be a math teacher. And so she filled out this application not knowing what it was for and ended up joining the war effort in this way. And the people that she worked with had like way more experience than she did. They actually wrote the books on how to study ciphers and codes that she was studying, and she was this 27-year-old girl from New York who was a junior member of the team, and she cracked the code on September 20th of 1940. Now, it's crazy because this unbreakable code that nobody could break and nobody could understand, and months and months and months went into trying to figure it out. This one girl who had been overlooked by everybody else figured it out, and it gave all of this valuable information to America and the war effort and helped save countless lives. It's interesting because it's so easy to feel like, what difference could we make? Like, what contribution could I have? Like, I'm not breaking any war codes anytime soon. Like, that is not my giftedness, right? Like, what difference could we make? But throughout time in history, God has been at work calling men and women just like us to follow him. And in this following him adventure, he takes our life and our experiences and our unique personalities and our talents, and he gives us the call to go out into the world and do good. Like, when you look at the people that Jesus called to follow him, the people that were surrounded by him, they weren't the people anybody would expect Jesus to pick. Like, when they thought about, for all of these hundreds of years, the Messiah was going to come and he was going to change things and he was going to save his people, he didn't go to like the religiously elite, and he didn't go to like the temple and handpick his crew. He picked fishermen, like blue collar guys who are out day after day working with their hands and doing, you know, rough handed stuff. And he picked people that nobody liked and didn't want to be around. He picked people that were overlooked by everybody else and called them to be on this incredible adventure with him. And what happened is, on this adventure, they got to experience life in a way they never would have otherwise. And one of the guys that Jesus called to follow him was a man named Peter. And I'm constantly fascinated with Peter's life. He was a fisherman. He worked outdoors. That's how he spent his life. And he lived by what he caught. And he got to go on this awesome journey when Jesus showed up and he was out fishing. And Jesus said, come follow me. I'm going to tell you how to be fishers of men. And Peter's like, all right, let's go. And he went. But he was like this impetuous guy who would like speak and blurt things out before he even thought about it. And in one moment, he'd have like incredible clarity and see who Christ was in profound ways. And in other moments, Jesus literally said, get behind me, Satan. Like, I don't want Jesus calling me Satan. Like, I'm pretty sure that's like not a place I want to be. But Peter was impetuous and he'd say all of these things and he'd kind of blurt stuff out. And he was the guy who was in. And he promised Jesus on that last night that Jesus had dinner with all of his friends and kind of prepared them for what was going to come and what they could expect. Jesus said, Peter, you're going to deny that you even know me. And Peter's like, absolutely not. Like, that would never happen. Even if I have to literally die with you, I would never deny that I knew you. But on that same night, a young girl intimidated Peter, and he denied knowing his friend. He denied that he even knew Jesus. And that wrecked him. In one of the Gospels, you can even read by the third time that he had denied Jesus, he makes eye contact with Jesus and he goes away weeping, just brokenhearted that he turned on his friend and he didn't keep his word and that he didn't do what he said he would do. And that guilt and that shame go with him. And the days following Christ dying and then Christ comes back, it's so interesting to see how Jesus treats his friends when he came back. Like, there's so many ways he could have acted, and there's so many things he could have done, and so many things that he could have said, but he doesn't do anything at all that we would expect. He goes out and he finds them, and by this time they're out back fishing, doing what they've always known how to do, and they're back in the water, and he kind of stands on the shore, and Peter's out on a boat, and he sees Jesus standing there, and he jumps out of the water, and he runs to the shore to get there as quickly as he can, and Jesus takes this incredible load of fish that they've caught, and he makes them breakfast. And he spends time feeding his friends and hanging out with them before he leaves for good. And it's incredible because in this moment, he could have said so many things to Peter, like, I told you this was going to happen, right? Like, it's so hard not to say I told you so when I told you so, right? Like, you do the thing I said you were going to do. And he didn't do that. And he didn't say, like, I'm disappointed. What were you thinking? And he didn't rake him over the coals and make him feel worse than he already felt. And he didn't say, like, how could you? I was counting on you. Jesus doesn't do any of that. In fact, he doesn't even really make it hard for Peter in this incredibly emotional moment. Here's what he says. Look at John chapter 21 and verse 15. When they'd finished breakfast, Jesus said to Simon Peter, Simon, son of John, do you love me more than these? Simon said to him, yes, Lord, you know that I love you. Then Jesus said, feed my lambs. Jesus said a second time, Simon, son of John, do you love me? And Peter said to him, yes, Lord, you know that I love you. So Jesus said, tend my sheep. And then a third time he says, Simon, son of John, do you love me? Peter was grieved because he said to them the third time, do you love me? And he said, Lord, you know everything. You know that I love you. Jesus said, feed my sheep. Truly, I say to you, when you were young, you used to dress yourself and walk wherever you wanted. But when you're old, you're going to stretch out your hands and another will dress you and carry you where you don't want to go. And he said this to show him what kind of death he was to glorify God. After saying this, he said, follow me. Now listen to how, there's a lot of layers in there, but here's what I want us to see. Peter denied Jesus. He denied even knowing him. After spending 3 years of his life with him, he denied that he even knew him. He swore on it. He swore an oath saying, I don't know this guy. But then Jesus gives Peter this incredible opportunity to say 3 times back to him that he loves him. Like, that's not a coincidence. Like, that didn't randomly just happen. It was a very intentional moment for Christ with Peter. He gives him 3 times to just say to his friend, I love you. He gives him 3 chances to overdo what he'd already done, right? Like, he messed up and he got it wrong and he denied him and he was hurt by it and he carried this guilt. But Jesus gives him 3 chances to get it right. He got it wrong, but now Jesus gives him this other opportunity to get it right. And here's the thing, like, we've all messed up. We've all been Peters, right? Like, we've all done the thing that we said we wouldn't do, and we've all done the thing that we promised would never happen, and we've gotten it wrong, and we've come up short, and we're like, just need another chance, right? Like, I just want to do over to go at it again, because I know if I got another chance, I could get it right. one of the most incredible things that Jesus Christ offers us, just like he offered his friend Peter, is a second chance. He gives us all the opportunity to go at it again and say, you know what, I messed up before, but this time I will not forget I love you. This time I won't forget the promise I made to be the guy, to be the girl that you've called me to be. And what's so incredible about Jesus Christ is he meets us right there in the hurt, right? Like Peter was hurting and he was disappointed and he was afraid and he didn't like himself or what he'd done. And Jesus met him right where he was and showed him a way out. And he does the exact same thing for us. Like Jesus doesn't say like, I want you to get your life figured out. I want you to make up for all the bad things you've done and all the places you didn't get it right. And once you've cleaned house, like then we can sit down and talk. Right in the middle of our messy lives and our messy homes, Christ meets us, grabs us by the hand and says, let me show you a way out. You don't have to stay here anymore. Like, I know you don't like yourself here. I know you're filled with pain and shame and guilt here. Let's go. You don't have to live there anymore. Let's do this together differently. Like, we all get to come to Jesus just as we are. And he meets us there. But what's so incredible about it is he doesn't leave us there. Like he meets us in our mess, but he doesn't leave us in the mess. He meets us where we are, but he shows us the way out. And he gives us hope and forgiveness. And he doesn't make it hard. He just says, follow me, let's go. Like, do you love me? Do you love me? Then let's go and let's do this together. And what's so incredible is that Jesus didn't just find Peter and like offer him a way out of the hurt and help him work past his guilt, gave him a job to do. He said, all right, if you love me, then this is what your love is going to require of you to do. I love N.T. Wright as a really, really smart guy. He said, the most remarkable thing about it is that by way of forgiveness, Jesus gives Peter a job to do. When Peter professes his love, Jesus doesn't say, well, that's all right then. He says, feed my lambs, look after my sheep, feed my sheep. It's so incredible that this is what Jesus says. Because again, it's not like, there aren't these just like throwaway words, sentences in the Bible. They mean something, they're important. And he didn't take the picture of sheep for granted. Because Jesus taught that he was the good shepherd. He taught this to his friends. He said, I'm the good shepherd, and a shepherd lays down his life for his friends, and a shepherd fights off the wolves. When the wolves come, the shepherd doesn't run. He guards the gate, and bad has to get through the shepherd to get to the sheep. And so when Jesus says, go feed my sheep, he shares his work with Peter. He's like, look, I'm going back to heaven, but you're here, and you got a church to build, and you got sheep to take care of, and you got to tend to them, and you got to feed them, and you got to strengthen them. Go take care of my people. Jesus says, if you love me, you express it by loving other people. And this isn't new. This is something he'd been telling, right? Like, what's the most important of all of the rules and all of the commands? Love God and love people. And when we love Christ, he gives us a job to do. He gives us work to do in his world to go out and take care of his kids, his sheep, his people, and help them and tend to them and feed them and strengthen them and take care of them. N.T. Wright also said this. He said, if you're going to do any single solitary thing as a follower and servant of Jesus, this is what it's built on. Somewhere deep down inside, there is a love for Jesus. And though you've let him down enough times, he wants to find that love to give you a chance to express it, to heal the hurts and failures of the past, and give you a new work to do. You know, Christ does the same for us today. He meets us in the jumble of our mess and our hurt and our pain and our struggles, and he loves us and he shows us the way out and he forgives us and he grants us the awesome grace upon grace to be who he called us to be. But then he says, I've got a job for you to do. If you love me, then you get to be the people in the world loving others. You get to be the people who go out and take care of the sheep. You get to be the people who go out and shine the light of Jesus Christ in dark and hard places. You get to take that love that I've shared with you and let it flow out of you in all areas of your life. And to do that, we've got to grow ourselves, and we've got to be willing and open to helping grow the people who are around us. You know, it's so interesting because when we say yes to Jesus, like some of us feel like, okay, I'm good, right? Like I got there. That was the destination. I'm good. Cruise control. Like let's just get through the rest of life. But saying yes to Jesus is just the beginning of the adventure. It's not the end. yes to Jesus is the very start of the adventure that we get to go on with him. When Jesus says, follow me, and we say yes, that's the beginning. And then the rest of our lives is growing into these people, these guys and these girls that he's called us to be, right? Because I say yes to Jesus, but guess what? I'm still bringing all the same junk I had in my life yesterday, right? Like, it doesn't magically disappear. It would be wonderful if it did, but it doesn't. Like, I've still got to find ways to work through my life, to be that girl, to be that guy that he's called us to be. It takes time to grow into these values that Jesus say matters. It takes a lifetime of following Jesus Christ to grow into that full potential that he's given to us. So if I'm going to grow myself, there's a couple things I have to be willing to do. I do it, one, by reading the Bible. Like, if I want to know Christ really, really well, I got to go where he is. Like, if I want to know what Jesus had to say about how to do life and what he did, I learn it in the wonderful pages of the Bible where I get to meet him and see who he is and see what he's done. Every one of us should make it a goal to read the Bible. Whether it takes you 10 years, 5 years, or 1 year, whatever your pace is, every one of us should make it a goal to go there to find Christ and see who he wants us to be. Because in these wonderful pages of the Bible, we get to read about God, and we get to read about this rich history of the people that God has worked through, and we get to see people who struggled just like we struggle, and we get to see people who had genuine emotions just like we do. Like, I love the Psalms for the very reason, like, you see people who are angry saying to God, God, I'm angry about this. Or you see people who are sad saying to God, God, I'm sad about this. How could you let this happen? Like, where are you? You get to see the genuine, raw emotion of life, right? Like, we don't have to put on our pretty, I'm good church face. Like, life is real and it's raw and it hurts sometimes. And we get to see how people reacted and worked with God again and again and again. And it encourages us. It gives us the courage we need to get up and try again, or it confronts us where we are with what we need to work on, or it comforts us in our hurts, or we get to find these rich promises that God's been making for thousands of years. In the wonderful pages of the Bible, we get to find the God who loves us and made us. We get to meet Christ, who came into this world and was a good shepherd for you and I and gave his life for us. And we get to come across hard things that we don't understand. Like, if you've ever read the Bible, you've read Leviticus, and it's weird. I mean, it just, there's blood, and there's slinging, and there's traditions that we don't do anymore. Thank God. I'm super thankful that we live in the New Testament, and Christ came, and we don't have to, like, murder animals and sling blood around, right? Like, we get to see hard stuff, and sometimes it's confusing and we don't understand it, and that's okay, because then we get to ask questions and then we get to talk to people about it, and it stirs up interesting conversations. Like, I am convinced I've read the Bible and that wasn't there before. Like, that's new. Somebody added that. That was not there the last time. I call my dad. My dad's my go-to. And I'm like, did this really? And he's like, yes. And he's so smart and he knows connections. But what happens is, when we start reading the Bible, we stir up ideas and conversation and curiosity. And we do find stuff we don't understand. And that's actually okay. That's normal and good. And we get to ask about it and talk about it. And in the midst of all of it, we get to grow in our faith and grow into who we've been called to be. I don't know if you have YouVersion on your phone. It's a free app you can download. It's got every translation of the Bible you can think of. It's got wonderful plans. You can read the Bible in a year. You can read the Bible in 90 days if you're feeling like crazy adventurous. I've done that. It's definitely a commitment, but you get a very different spectrum about how the Bible works from beginning to end. And you get to crush Leviticus and Deuteronomy in like no time at all. So that's if you're feeling adventurous. But they have plans that you can play around with. But if you just start somewhere, start in the New Testament, start in the book of Psalms, you get to start partnering with God and who he is and what he's been doing through history. We grow when we read the Bible. We grow in our faith. We grow in our understanding of Christ. We grow in our understanding of the church when we just start reading about who God is and what he's done. But another aspect of growing is this idea of learning something new. It's so easy to get to points in our life where we're like, I'm good, right? Like, I graduated school. I got all the basic knowledge that I need. Maybe I got college. Like, I've got everything that I need to know. The basics are there. I'm solid. I read this super interesting. Harvard Health said, a higher level of education is associated with better mental functioning in old age. Experts think that advanced education may help keep memory strong by getting a person into the habit of being mentally active. Challenging your brain with mental exercise is believed to activate processes that help maintain individual brain cells and stimulate communication among them. You get to keep your memory longer by learning new things. And it also said, here are some ideas on how to do it. You could read, join a book club, play chess, bridge, write your life story down, do a crossword puzzle, jigsaw puzzles, take a class, pursue music, art, design a new garden. If you're at work, volunteer for something that you don't know how to do or a project that involves a skill that you don't normally use, because building and preserving brain connections, they said, is an ongoing process, so make lifelong learning a priority. There's a huge deal when we approach the world from a learning mindset. It is a very marked contrast to, I'm good, I know everything, right? Like, you don't have anything to teach me, I already know that, right? There's a huge difference between being open to learning and being closed off and closed-minded. The very best thing we can do for ourselves is make a commitment to never give up on learning. We all have room to grow. Like, there's something every one of us can learn this year that helps us grow and keeps us sharp. Guess what? We're better people when we're teachable. We're better to be around when we have an open heart that instead of looking at everybody else and saying, I've got it, you have nothing to teach me, instead we say, you know what, your life is different than mine. What can we learn from each other? We are way better people to be around when we approach the world with a teachable mindset instead of closing ourselves off from other people and from other things that we don't know. One of the best ways that we grow ourselves is by challenging ourselves to learn something new or do something that we've never done before. We took our kids skiing yesterday to Brandywine. If you ever want to go on an adventure, take a couple of kids skiing. We learned something new, how to be sweaty and patient all at the same time. But you know what? Like, putting yourself in a position that you haven't been in a long time or that you've never tried before, you learn new things about yourself, right? Like, you get to, like, it's awkward and there was crying and there was tears and there was falling down and there was a lot of craziness involved. But when you try something new, you have to respond different. You've never done it before. You have no context to put it in. It stirs up something in you that you've never tried before. It stirs up ideas that you've never thought about. It makes you try and be courageous in new ways because you've never had to do what you have to do before. And what happens is when you try something new, you get to live a more adventurous life. God didn't say live a boring life. I mean, we do that to ourselves. We get ourselves comfortable and into a routine that we just want to stick with because it's easy. But God never said, live the easiest, boring life you could live. He's the one who calls us to the adventure and says, try something, risk something, do something different, because out there on the edge of adventure, on the other side of fear, we get to see who we really could be. We get to try living life in a way we've never done it before. And God gave you that beautiful mind to be curious, to try and poke away at new ideas and new things. And the more we learn, the more we grow. The more we try, the more we challenge ourselves to be in an open learning mindset, to be in places that we've never done before. And it also creates wonderfully unique opportunities that as we are growing, we get to help others along as well. Like, one of the cool things is that you don't have to be an expert to help somebody else, right? Like, no matter where you are in life, you can help. You can make a difference in the life of somebody else. We're celebrating Martin Luther King Day tomorrow. Listen to what he said. Everybody can be great because anybody can serve. You don't have to have a college degree to serve. You don't have to make your subject and verb agree to serve. You only need a heart full of grace and a soul generated by love. Every one of us has the potential to be great because we all have the potential to serve somebody else. We all have the potential to partner up with life and instead of, you know, okay, I've got room to grow, I've got areas to grow, but how do I look outward and say, I can help others grow as well? Like, what if we just started with our family, the people who are closest to us, and say, how can I serve my family this year? What would it look like if I took the attitude of service to my family this year? such a shift, right? Like I get the opportunity. I get the privilege. Remember we talked about complaining? I don't have to. I get to serve my family this year. How do I serve them well? How do I love them? How do I encourage them? How do I help strengthen them? How do I serve them in the kind of ways that makes their life better? You know, we could go out and conquer the world, but if we don't get it right at home, what is it worth? I mean, we know that feeling of unhappiness at home. What if we said, I can change that? I can be the one who makes it my job to serve my family, even when I'm grouchy and tired and frustrated and they are being awful, right? Like, it's their fault. Everything is their fault. All true. But even still, what if in there I found ways to serve my kids, my spouse, my parents, my brothers, my sisters, whoever your family is? What if you took the attitude of service towards them this year? You said, you know what? God called me to feed his sheep, and I can feed the sheep, the family that he's given me, by serving them day after day after day after day. Because these families are wonderful gifts from God that we get to be a part of and that we get to serve. What if from our family we looked outward and said, how could I help my community grow? I mean, we live in a world where there is so much need. There is hurt and there is struggle, and it's very, very real. And it's as simple as feeding somebody a meal or showing up and helping them do life. It's as simple as coming alongside the life of a kid and telling them that they matter, that God loves them, to just being present in the life of somebody else. You don't have to be an expert to just look somebody in the eye and say, God loves you. Your life is valuable. You have a contribution to make. Don't give up just yet. Who knows what God might do? God calls us to feed his sheep, to take care of them, to encourage them, to strengthen them, to be a part of the work that he wants to do in the world. And you can't do it at a distance. It's really, really hard to make an impact in the life of somebody else from a distance. And in our community, there are needs. There are so many needs that we get to be actively a part of helping in. And here's what's cool. You don't have to be somebody else or have somebody else's gifts to help. You can help. What are you good at? There are ways to use that. There are ways to help, whether it's fixing up somebody's home, or we've been partnering in a school and doing math facts with first graders. Do you know what I do? I show them a flashcard and say, what is 7 plus 6 equals? I can do 7 plus 6 math. I can't do a lot of math, but that's math I can do. But you know what? I get to look at the same kids month after month after month, and I ask them about life, and I get to be a part of who they are, and somebody gets to say to them, I'm so excited to see you. You matter. We have so many places in our community, whether it's just feeding a meal or coming alongside of kids, that we could make a difference and have an impact with them. There's local organizations that are all over the place trying to make an impact in the world for good. Christ says, I love you. And if you love me, you've got a job to do. We've got work to do in this world to shine the light of Christ, even in the darkest of places. And we get to serve in our home and help our family grow. And we get to serve in our community and help the community grow. If there is a church in the community should be better because of it. They should be better because the church says this community matters and we want to help. We want to make a difference in the lives of other people's. And then here in the church, we get to serve in the church that God gave us, right? Like, we get to be adventurous souls that brave winter storms to be in church together and hear about God and grow and do life together. And that's an awesome privilege. But the other side of that privilege is God says, if you love me, love people. And there are people in the church that we get to come alongside of and do life together. I mean, what better place than in our kids' ministry to say, God loves you and you matter and you can spend 1 hour a week loving our kids. You can partner up with other people. And what's crazy town, listen to what God does. God's going to take your life experience, something you've struggled with and you've wrestled around with it, and he's going to put you in the life of somebody else who's wrestling with the same thing. And you're going to help each other. God's going to take some awful moment that you've experienced and you've struggled with the pain and you've struggled with the guilt and you've struggled with finding peace and how to work through it all, and he's going to put you in the life of somebody else who's going to be where you were, and you're going to help them take one step closer to following Jesus Christ because you get to share your life experience with them. God takes what he does in us and he gives us these unique opportunities to partner up with other people, whether it's serving on a team or in a life group or being part of, you know, I'm not on the sidelines. I'm not cheering from the stands. I am in the game. I'm a player and I'm wearing the jersey and I say this matters and I want to be on the team serving Christ here in the church. We get to experience so much about who God is when we say yes to following Jesus Christ. But that's just the beginning. The rest of our lives is growing up in him and helping others to grow as well. I mean, the peak of spiritual maturity isn't knowing everything. It's finding somebody else and helping them grow up in Christ as well. It's finding somebody else who's been where we were and helping them see the light out and showing them the way that we can go. It's so easy to think, like, what difference could I make, right? Like, what contribution could I have? I'm just me, and it's not a whole lot. But guess what? We're all underqualified. We're all kids playing dress up, right? Pretending to be adults at some point in our life. But God still calls us and says, you've got a job to do. Let's do it together. You've got work to do in this world, and he gives us this wonderful life and this wonderful church and our family and our communities to partner with him and shine the light of Christ day after day after day. He says, let's grow up together. If you love me, go out and love somebody else. If you are going to follow me, how do you help make an impact in the life of somebody else? I'm a big fan of the poet Mary Oliver, who was a Pulitzer Prize-winning poet, and she died this week at the age of 83. She was actually here from the Cleveland area. She lived in Maple Heights before she moved to Massachusetts, where she spent the rest of her life kind of in Cape Cod. She wrote just these very, very simple words, but they were so powerful and profound. They had a huge impact on a lot of people who read her work. I want to share a couple of hers with you today. She said, I want to think again of dangerous and noble things. I want to be light and frolicsome. I want to be improbable, beautiful, and afraid of nothing as though I had wings. She said, tell me, what is your plan to do with your one wild and precious life? I love these words. Like, they stir up my heart and, like, wild, I'm in. Let's do something. I want to be wild. I want to be dangerous. I want to be adventurous for good. But imagine what God might do if we weren't afraid to try. I mean, imagine what God might do in us, in our families, in our communities, in this church, if we started dreaming again of dangerous and noble things. God didn't call us to live mediocre, boring lives. He called us to live wild and dangerous lives for him. And we all get this one shot, this wild, precious life to grow and give the best of who we are to serving him. We've all got places and room that we can grow. But it's in that toiling and striving and working to grow and learn and try new things that the very best of life takes place. And it's easy to miss that, right? Because usually in the growing phase, I'm like, just get me to the end. I'm done. I don't want to be here in the hard, sweaty working phase. I want to be at the I know it phase. But it's in that phase where the very best of life happens. And I don't want to miss it. I don't want our church to miss it or waste this incredible opportunity that God's given us to serve him here in the world. Just imagine what God might do if we said yes to adventuring with him this year. Just imagine what God might do in our community if we just said, I'm in, where can we go? Dear God, I pray that you would be with us. I pray that you would stir up something right and good within our hearts to follow you better this year. I pray, Father, just as you met Peter, that you would meet us, that you would stir up what is right and good in our hearts, and we would say yes to following Jesus Christ. I pray, Father, that you would give us a vision for the work that you've called us and equipped us to do. I pray, Father, that we would see the job you've given us of loving others and tending your sheep as a huge priority for our life. I pray, Father, that we would not be afraid, but I pray we would be bold and courageous for good this year, that you would do an awesome work in us and through us. In Jesus' name I pray. Amen.